Hello, everybody. My name is Ante Arto, and welcome to the Psychic Matters podcast, episode number 52. For all of you out there who may be grieving this Christmas, perhaps you have lost someone very dear to you recently, or perhaps it's been several years now since your loved one has passed away, but at times of family gatherings or special occasions throughout the year, you feel their absence very strongly. And maybe you feel as if your grief has not ever left, or not even lessened in any way. Well, this is the podcast for you. Rudy Hunter is on the show. Rudy is a bodywork teacher, an incredible healer, and an energy worker. And in this brilliant podcast episode, Rudy will lead you through three very unique, very personal to you healing processes to help you move through your own personal grief. This particular episode comes with a warning. Now, not all of my podcasts come with a warning, just this particular one. And both Rudy and I ask you to please not listen to this podcast if you are driving or operating machinery. So if you are, perhaps come back to this podcast later and listen to it at a time when you're in a safe place and you can safely partake in the exercises that Rudy will be leading you through. Thank you. So just before we get into this episode, a quick announcement. Have you ever heard of the mediumship hour? Yes, it is one of the web's best kept secrets. Now, I don't know why it's so secret, but not many people seem to know about it. Now, I know I mentioned it a couple of podcasts ago, but I thought that I would take the opportunity to mention it again. Every Tuesday evening at 7 p.m. UK time, that's 2 p.m. EST or 11 a.m. PST, on the internet, I hold a free one-hour event, and it's called the Mediumship Hour. And I work usually with either Leslie Malone and Tyrone Cusack, two amazing mediums, and we spend that hour bringing messages through from communicators in the spirit world to the audience in the Zoom room. So please do join us for that. It happens every Tuesday throughout the year. And of course, everyone is welcome. This coming Tuesday, which is the 21st of December, all three of us, Leslie, Tyrone and myself, will be taking the platform in a Christmas special, which will run for 90 minutes. And we all three work in very different ways. So it should be very interesting to watch three different mediums work. So if that is something you'd like to check out, you can find the Zoom joining details on my website under events. And if you miss the Christmas event next week, really don't worry. We are there every single Tuesday throughout the year. So if you are curious about mediumship, or perhaps you're hoping to get a message or a contact from one of your loved ones in spirit world, maybe you are someone who can't get to a church or a center, or you just want to come along and watch to see what it's all about, well, you are more than welcome. Head to anteato.com and look under events, and you can pick up the Zoom joining details there. Meanwhile, here is this week's episode with my incredible guest, Rudy Hunter. Rudy Hunter is with me in the studio today. Hello, Rudy. How are you doing?
Hi, Anne. I'm good. It's delightful to be with you and to be back. It's really, really a treat.
It's just great. It's been about a year, actually. And what a year it's been. I know that there's been some incredible things that have happened.
Yes, so indeed.
Let's address those head on. You have lost your best friend and husband, a great friend to many, many people who may be listening to this podcast, and possible future friends to people who are also listening. George Khoury, your husband. Yes. What a great loss he is. And I know you only lost him 8 weeks ago, Rudy, so it's very, very early days.
Yes. Very fresh, very, very weepy, very mourny. Yes. It's been a tough year.
I know. And you are just so wonderful to come on here, because I know you want to talk about grief and what you've learned through the process of, well, not even what you've learned, what you're beginning to understand more and more. And I know that you are a healer, and that you have some wonderful techniques to share with the listeners as well. So this should be a fascinating episode this week.
Well, we are going to have fun, even though the whole topic doesn't sounds like the opposite of fun.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do some processes for folks as well, because there's George is not the first person in my life that I've lost. I've lost a whole selection of friends. And ironically, George and I, when we were first together, I came down to New York from Toronto, and the very first thing we were running a healing circle for gay men in Manhattan during the height of the AIDS crisis, for folks who couldn't get into, didn't have access to even alternative healthcare or spiritual support. So we ran a healing circle, and we were burying a lot of people. And I used to say to myself, wow, this is a great start to a relationship. I mean, that's just good. You know, are we ever going out for dinner or going to do anything fun, damn it?
Yes.
So we got very familiar with the process. And through the years, you know, we have all, there's a spoiler alert about grief that I think everybody needs to know, because technically we do know it as people, but it's in the furthest back recesses in the cupboard in our mind, that, because we don't want to think about it. We will all, with zero exceptions, and I'll give that to you in writing, we will all grieve people who leave. We will be leaving ourselves, but we will all be going through this process, some of us effortlessly, some of us briefly, some of us clutching and screaming, and some of us, well, probably most of us crying. But there is not a person who doesn't get touched by this. So it's an inevitability, and there are things to know about it that help along the way. I mean, being a new widower, the one thing I didn't plan for, I planned for everything else in creation, but not this. I very quickly went on a search to other widowers and widows and said, okay, I need data here. How do you navigate this thing? How do you do mornings? How do you do nighttimes? How do you do the weak and trembly parts of the day? How do you deal with something when you get triggered with an overflow of memories? And that's been really helpful, and good, wonderful, meaning, sweet people have given me awkward, terrible advice, which is fine, because we all do. We don't know. Nobody knows what to say. So that's a good thing to know. Nobody knows what to say to you.
Yeah, it's hard to know, because we want to comfort, don't we? We want to say something. Absolutely. To yes. Reach out to you, to hold your heart. But how do we do that effectively? So what have you learned from that? What is your advice?
Well, my advice is from this side of the fence is to focus on the sweetness. I have been inundated with sweetness from George's friends. And they were George's friends and my friends, and we did a lot of our life as a unit. So there's a lot of lovely intermingling. But the sweetness has been epic. Even the awkward, terrible advice given from an open, lovely heart has been sometimes unbearably difficult to take in. So that's been a little exquisite. And there's one other piece of advice that does rise up from very wise people. And I wish I was clever enough to have come up with this piece of advice, but I am stealing it as of today, and I will give it to people for forever. Everybody has to find their own way through grief, because it's very personal, it's very unique, and the exploring of your way to do it starts to bring back a little essence of control in a terrible situation. And not all grief comes from terrible situations. A lot of grief comes from people who've been sick for donkey's years and they eventually pass. And it's still sad and people still grieve, but it isn't a car accident or a sudden illness or a fall off a cliff. The other thing to know is that there's a way. Thankfully, I have done this for years. I learned this years ago at an old NLP course. Thank you, NLP, for this. They had a very complicated process called pre-grieving. And I started doing it immediately after the course because I saw the substantial relationships in my life. When those folks leave it, we are lost. there's a section of time where we're lost and we don't know what to do. By pre-grieving, by imagining how we will do without that person, whether it's your children or your dog or your husband or your wife or your brother or your sister or whoever it is, what we really do is we prep the nervous system to be ready when it's necessary. So the amount of shock, and one of the things about losing George from that I got from everybody is the amount of shock that they were in because of the suddenness of it. Because I had pre-grieved him, my nervous system had a program. It had a pattern to fall into. And this doesn't have to be a fancy process. You can just imagine, and I only recommend you do this when you're not fighting, and when you're in a good day. Because otherwise, if you do it in the middle of a row, it's like, oh, well, he's going to eat the poison mushrooms I'll serve him, and then I'll push him off a cliff, and I'll go to Vegas or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So you do it when you're in a good space, and you imagine your life with their physical presence no longer here. And that begins the surfacing of sadness and grief and wonder. And the nervous system, because they are in fact still here when you're pre-grieving, goes on alert that this is something that will be useful because it will be inevitable. Either you're leaving first or they're leaving first in every relationship. And folks probably know I'm a very demented animal lover. So I do this for all my animals, all my friends, any substantial relationship. And that even included some business relationships that were valuable. Because when those go, that grief comes, even if it's, you know, your lawyer or your business partner. It doesn't just have to be a lover or a friend.
And is there a process to this, Rudy, this pre-grieving? Is there a certain way to do it?
Yeah, there's a very bumbly long way. Part of why I wanted to get with you to do this is all folks have to do is to lean into the energy work that will be embedded on this recording. And instead of doing it as we're going to do it for someone who has actually left, you can do it for someone who is still here. So energetically is a faster way to get that set up. Otherwise, it's an awful lot of thinking and intellectual prep. So it'll be something folks can lean into to use. I'm a big fan of the easy way.
Oh, I love an easy way. For sure. Yeah. So are you going to do that now or should we do that in a bit?
Let's do it in a bit.
We'll do that in a bit. Okay, so we'll come back to that, folks. So keep listening. Ha ha.
Well, we have to have the sex talk first. Of course, I didn't pre-warn you we were going to have the sex talk, but we are.
Okay.
One of the things, depending on who you're losing or who you've lost, the levels of physical intimacy is actually what grievers want more than anything else. And I can't believe I'm the first one that I'm aware of to voice this out loud, probably because I started life as a potty mouth. That's probably why. But that's what we crave. We crave their smell, their touch, the places they kissed us. And I'm not talking necessarily about Paris or Rome, although that too. We crave that because that is the thing we are very aware as grievers we can never get back. We can stare at a photograph, watch a video, go to a memorial. We can sniff their clothes. By the way, I used to wonder about the sniffing the clothes thing, because every griever does that. I'm pretty sure every mom and every dad does that too for their kids who are still here. And they're not just checking for nappies. But that smelling of the person, their scent, actually has a very powerful neurological explanation. The olfactory route from the nose to the brain is the shortest neural pathway in the human body. It's the shortest neural pathway in the brain. So when we smell something, we have a more full recollection of details. Now, I know this from doing trauma work with people. When we're unlocking trauma of, let's say, a car accident, I will frequently ask them to focus, if we're not making really fast progress, because I like to work quickly, if we're not making really fast progress, I will have them remember the scent of the scene of the accident. So typically, it'll be something like burning tires, or for some people, it's the smell of blood. Or for some people, it's the smell of the air freshener in the car. Now, remember, they're not actually smelling the smell. they're smelling or re-remembering the memory of a scent that takes them fully back into the memory for release. Now, because I know this, this explains the why you sniff their t-shirts thing when you miss somebody. But it's one of the ways into a reliving of intimate moments. And it doesn't just have to do with smell. Where I'm going to take us all through. This is a slightly longer, more cumbersome process. I'm going to hit the highlights with everybody here. Here's how this goes. We have some kind of intimate life with who we've lost. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a sexual life. So let me get the non-sexual stuff out of the way so not everybody is weirded out by this. Everybody likes to smell a baby's head, for example, because it's a magic, wonderful, pure smell. If you lose a baby or a child, that's one of the intimate moments you can have with them. I've lost a lot of animals in my life, and dogs and cats and other pets and animals who we have contact with have particular behaviors where they press into us, they fall asleep on our arm, they stick their nose in our ear. There's a lot of touch things that they do, some of which become special over time because they do them again and again, and they're adorable, and that imprints on us. And if you watch couples from a distance, which I love to do, you will often see, and it doesn't always have to be on date night, if you see couples out, you'll see touches that they share with one another. Sometimes it's guiding the other person's body to safety, like getting them out of the road or lifting them up off a curb or assisting. Sometimes it's the between time when a lecture gets boring. I love to watch couples from behind because it's kind of fun. There are a lot of couples that I see that will play with the backs of each other's necks or their ears. And it's so intimate and so lovely. And it's a little code that they've worked out, and it's delightful. So those are kind of non-sexual intimate touches. When it comes to bigger intimacy, we have very powerful hormonal memories of where we were touched, how we were kissed, and all the things that go on behind closed doors. And if you ask any griever, they will tell you they want that back. There's the feeling that that was stolen from them, because we know the body's not coming back. The spirit and the essence and the memories and the love is still here for sure. But that touch is a strong yearning or a strong craving. The nervous system is another little insight to what happens. The nervous system goes hunting for that stimuli or as close as it can get, which means that someone who's lost someone who has a lot of those kind of memories is going to be very open to trying out all kinds of substances, events, circumstances, people, and activities, because their nervous system is driving them to find something close. So it does account for a lot of crazy behavior with right. folks who've newly lost people. Thankfully, I am too sensible for that. But the reflexes and the awareness in everybody's nervous system open to that. So when you see someone who's grieving, we know they're vulnerable. And we say, oh yeah, they're really vulnerable. This is part of what we mean. This is what we see. We see their hunger and their yearning for trying to get that back. And I have great news. There's a way to get that back in the nervous system. And I'm going to do that with everybody on the call today. And I want to talk a couple of people down off the fence who will hear what I've just said and will think to themselves, don't mess with my memories. It's all I have left of them. So here's what I want everybody to hear really clearly. If grief is a sticky glue or schmutz between the love or intimacy you feel with a loved one and yourself, if we reduce and remove that grief, the love actually gets stronger and the experience comes closer, not further away. And another way to say it is we're not messing with the intimate memory. We're messing with the muddy window we're seeing it through. We're basically cleaning that window off so we can help to re-access it more strongly, because that's what we actually want when we've lost someone. I mean, one of the stories I always tell, one of the dogs who we both used to have, who I love dearly, when we would fall asleep on the couches, he was a medium-sized dog, but he would wait till we had fallen asleep, and then he'd crawl up on either his belly, George's belly or my belly, and lie on his back, and then he would stretch out in ways that only a dog can. So he was basically as tall as we were, all stretched out but lying down, and is perched while we fell asleep on our bellies. And I want that back like mad, because that was a beautiful thing, and he did it a lot. So you can use what we'll do in a few minutes for things like that, and I strongly recommend you do. And you can also do it for, I don't know, did they pull your hair and call you Susan? I don't know what you're into. Whatever they did, however fantastic it was, you can do it for that.
That would be nice. So if you had a friend who you haven't seen for ages, you don't know where they've gone, but you've got some lovely memories of time you've shared with them, you could do it for that as well.
Yes, absolutely you can. Oh, lovely. And I wouldn't wait. I would load yourself up, because as soon as the connection is kind of broken in terms of seeing them, we're trying to stay attached to that love, and the physicality of it, the touch is very important. I won't say anything rude or out of sorts, which is probably a little unlike me, but over the course of our relationship, George and I were together 28 years, which is a long time. And over the course of time, aside from, you know, real intimacy and things, we taught a lot of classes together. We went to lots of business meetings and this, that, and the other. We were very busy dudes. One of my favorite things, and the reason I bring this up is not to tell tales out of school, but it also doesn't have to be something, like I just told a story about our dog who did something that touched us. You can be the one who is doing the thing, which opens up a whole other world too. So during business meetings or in between things, one of my favorite things to do as a way to sort of reconnect with George when we were busy out in the world was to hook my middle fingers under the crook of his knee. I didn't plan on it. It's just something that became a habit, and it was just a way of checking in. So it's just the same as the watching a couple from behind who plays with each other's neck or hair or whatever. It's just a way of saying I'm here.
It's
a
reassurance, isn't it? Because I do that with my partner in bed when he's lying down. I'll just slip my three fingers under his tummy just as a connection, because he's too hot to get too close to. but you want a connection, so you just put a couple of little things out, and so you get that lovely communion together. It's lovely.
That's exactly right. Communion is exactly right. So whether we initiated it or they initiated it, those memories we can get access to again. Because the truth of the matter is they're still there, but they are mired in layers of shellacked grief. And that's why it feels so far away.
And what would you say then? So this all sounds great, and I'm really excited about this. I'm really looking forward to this coming up, Rudy. But what would you say? A thought comes into my mind of the naysayers who may say, oh, but if you do that, how are you going to accept that they are no longer here?
Yeah. Well, we're starting from grief, which is part of the war on acceptance anyway. If we could accept the truth of what is, we would have very little grief. It's the fight to keep them here. And the irony is that this process, and as far as I know, I'm the only one doing this. I have actually trained, excuse me, some of the people I've trained to do my work, the ASH workers that I train, I've trained them how to do this as well. But as far as I know, this is new to the game. Here's what I actually say to naysayers, because it's been a delight to me. In the folks that I've worked with and some of my ASH workers have worked with, it is not uncommon doing this process. How do you say this in a polite way on podcast? To get the hormonal flow going dramatically. Is that cryptic enough?
That's beautifully said.
Thank you. So we're only having a relationship with ourselves, with the memory of our loved one. I mean, I know we're still connected through the heart. I know we're still connected through spirit and all of those things, but you don't have to re-up for the whole nine yards in order to have your nervous system open in regard to this touch, because this touch missing is a form of kinesthetic trauma. It's like something you love deeply and then it's taken away from the spot on you. And I doubt anybody listening would have trouble coming up with touches they remember, but think pelvis, think chest, think, you know, head and neck. You'll find something that you yearn for. So now that we've done the big sidling up to it, let's get on with it.
Wonderful. Lovely. How exciting. Yeah. Just before we do that, you mentioned ash workers, which people may not know what that is. Could you explain a little bit about that?
Yeah, that's a hands-on and hands-off remote long-distance healing system that I developed. I actually built it because I've taken almost every healing course in existence, and I've taken lots of great ones, and I've always thought to myself, well, if I was building a course, I'd include that, and I'd put this neat thing in that. So that's what Ashworkers really is. It's a way of working with people and animals remotely without touch. Touch, you can touch if you want. So I train folks. I run the course every 2 years. There's a basic and an advanced level, and it's a marvelously successful way of creating change. And these days, because of my practice, I mostly refer private session work to those folks. So I'm an active referrer to my advanced students because they do great work and they're nice people.
Fabulous. Well, thank you for explaining that. That's great.
Oh, sure. So I want to dive right in deep. And when you're listening to this podcast, please do not be driving. Do not be distracted. Don't operate heavy machinery. And please be alone. The one thing I get asked more than anything else when we go to do this work with people is, oh, can I do this in bed when my husband's sleeping next to me? No. No, you may not. That's called blurring the lines in your nervous system. You need to be alone when you do this because it's only about you and whoever is no longer with us. So I'll give you a second to scan through your memory banks to find a juicy touch or a juicy physical action or a juicy act. The more complete and succinct it is for starters, the better result you'll get initially. Eventually, as you start to do this, more and more things will naturally arise, which is great. So once you know what you're working on, your brain knows, your nervous system knows, we're almost all set, but we need to do one little thing first. I'd like you to say to yourself, either aloud or, I mean, if you can do aloud, that would be great, or silently, it's okay for me to relive this.
That's a powerful phrase, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because sometimes we're either scared or we believe we shouldn't have permission. And it can often bring up a whole bunch of questions like, let me put this podcast on pause for 10 minutes and think about why I'm dragging my feet. I say I want this touch back. And Rudy said, you know, it's okay. It's like, doesn't feel okay.
It's interesting because, like, I don't know. I have no idea what you're about to tell us. I'm thinking of I'm going through my own Rolodex and I'm thinking about something about my father, but and just touching his hand and his face. Very simple memory, but very strong. And it's making me have this kind of rising panic a little bit, like, oh, where are you going to take me? And I feel a little scared and anxious about that.
That's why I love you. Yeah. So here's my advice for starters. Don't do that one first. Once you've gone through the process, and the process, by the way, the energetic part is you won't have any idea what's going on. It's very relaxing and lovely, but I can tell you that till I'm blue in the face. So don't do that one first. Pick something else that's worth having that's either with a different person or a different kind of...
Oh ding dong. Ding dong. okay, so something, a little bit more intimate than an intimate person, or?
Personally, I would go for intimate, because if we're going to go through all this trouble, I think it should be worth it, you know?
Yeah, I can't think of anyone.
You don't have to tell us what it is.
This is a fun session. Okay, I will. I've got to think of something though, Rudy. I can't think of anything. Keep thinking, everybody at home.
Okay. Think of old lovers who've eaten the poison mushrooms and are no longer with us.
Yeah. Okay. Got it. Got it.
Ah, there you go. That did not take long, ladies and gents.
No, it never with a lifetime like mine, darling.
You dial back and you go, oh, yeah, he used to do that thing with a saddle and the buttercream. Oh, yeah, I remember that. That was good.
That'll do. I'll use that one.
One of those.
Okay. All right.
So that's what's up. That's what's blocked from grief. So check to see if it's okay for you to re-experience that just for yourself, that touch. And presuming that it is, that's the one you'll do first. Later on, you can go back and do the one that you weren't sure about. And the reason all of these are safe is because it's only us we're dealing with. We're not actually dealing with the other person. We're dealing with our side of the memory in the nervous system. That was a lot of blah, blah, blah to get here. Now we'll do something much more fun. Sit or lie or slouch or lean in a comfortable position. And take my advice on this. If this particular touch always happened when you were lying on your left side, lie on your left side when we do the energy work. If you were, oh dear, this is going to sound so naughty. If you were always on all fours it is. If there was always, here's another little tip that will help your nose and your recall. If you always lit the same candle or the same scent, light that and do this process. These are just ways of getting the nervous system into rhythm with it easily. So we'll sit quietly for a couple of minutes, which is great on podcasts. I like to tell podcast hosts that, yes, we'll be doing some quiet sitting work, and you can feel everything in them contract. It's like, what do you mean silence? Oh, no.
No, but that's great because everybody knows now that there's going to be a period of silence here.
So yes.
Prepare for it. Do not switch off. There's important things going on, isn't there, Rudy?
There are important things. Okay. And here's what I'm doing. I'll give you an overview of what's happening. We're going to the memory, to the place, and we're just opening it a smidge. That's my job. We open it everything I say sounds awful now. We're going to open it a crack, and then the nervous system takes it all the rest of the way at the speed that it can handle. That's the other reason that it's safe. Okay. So you sit quietly. I recommend you close your eyes. Be in a position, if you can, where that touch, or close to it, where that touch happened, because it's just easier for your body to know that. We'll go for a couple of minutes, and I'll let you know when we're done. We'll get the work started for all of us right now. There you go. Bring your attention easily and gently back. Wherever you slid off to or meandered to, just allow yourself to come back slowly. As a very first thing, once you arrive back, I want you to check a couple of things for yourself. I want you to check what you notice, irrespective of what I say. There's no should about what you should or shouldn't notice. What you notice is what you notice. My suggestion is notice anything that may have arrived and anything that may have left, because that's a great way to start discerning what is different in you. And don't just check the physical body. I know we're talking a lot about touch, but check how you feel mentally, emotionally, spiritually, karmically towards this memory, that person, these times. And then also do check your physicality. Sometimes the tissue itself, depending on where it is or if it's been bound up, contracted, the tissue itself will sometimes, well, fairly often, it will expand a little bit or relax. Sometimes there are some clients who have all kinds of roller coastery stuff that happens afterwards. And sometimes there's the end of a little piece of grief that was stuck in the tissue. So there might be tears that usually don't have a lot of content or meaning to them. And it's also totally fine to just be still and enjoy the energy work, because this is a process that does take a little time in opening, because we're used to having it very tightly contracted. So, and staying out of content for us, unless you want to tell us shocking, irreverent, outrageous things, let me know what your experience was.
Well, I feel incredibly uplifted after that. I feel very happy. I had a flashes and flashes and flashes of other parts of memories that came with this person. Beautiful things. And so I feel incredibly uplifted and full of joy. Whereas before, I think when I was used to think about that person, I could feel it in my solar plexus. I felt a tension and an anxiety, almost like wanting to hold on to them. But now I feel like I'm sharing a space with them. So it feels different.
Wow, that's beautifully put. What you describe, that wanting to hold on is grief. That's what it is. It's a clutch. And being in the same space as someone really is a kind of mutuality that we want desperately. We don't really know how to get there. And left to our thinking mind, that's a long, arduous, often unsuccessful way get into that territory.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's beautiful. I feel very uplifted. I really do. I'd be so interested if people listening have uplifting experiences or other. Do let Rudy and I know, so, and other people listening, come onto the Facebook page and let us all know, or send us an email.
We are very nosy. We want to know everything. Well, maybe not. I want to know everything, but the highlights anyway.
Yeah, the highlights. Yeah, very interesting.
So let me help rescue the 10 or 15% of people who are still raw, because been there, done that, got the t-shirt in spades, raw sucks. And I hope they've lasted this long. I maybe should have done this in reverse order at the beginning, but raw is a full of pain place. I'm going to do a very different kind of energetic process now, and it's a very active one. I'll set it up. We'll do it for a short burst of time. It's actually a little draining for me. I'm not humble bragging. It's just is. I'll have to have a nap afterwards. It's really important. Grief is, in my estimation, one of the stickiest emotions we have. It's very gluey, and it's happy to hang around. When we're still raw with fury, what makes us raw is we're still angry. We're not only grieving, we're furious. That's what makes raw. We have to be able to expel that anger in a way where we're not going to hurt ourselves, we're not going to hurt other people, we're not going to do dangerous acts. And all of those things are very common in grief. Folks who are still furious and raw punch people, have car accidents, they road rage, they hurt themselves, they do all kinds of things. I want to be able to pull that level down quickly and safely. And we're going to do this with something I've been doing for years with different targets. It's called a push. This is a weird thing I discovered I was able to do. So when I tell you to, not now, not yet, I want you to pony up and make me a target. Not yet. And by that I mean silently and not out loud and not acting out. You're only going to do this in your head and in your heart. You're going to focus that fury at the sound of my voice when I tell you to. I'm going to pre-brace before we do it. And there's a particular thing called an energetic push, which I will do for a limited amount of time. It will probably only be 30 or 40 seconds. During that time, your job is to push as much negative, angry, raw energy towards me as humanly possible. You have to keep going. You can't do 5 seconds ago, okay, I'm done, because that's a different mental state. I can handle as much as you want to push, and I'll be able to handle it on the replay too, because it's set up to do that. Did I leave anything out? Is that clear?
No, that's all clear. And but just to be clear to everybody listening, this is including you. This is not just for me. This is all the listeners. Is that right?
Everyone.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. All the listeners live and on replay for all time.
Okay.
And Anne as well. Okay. So I'm going to, I will get
and,
set up.
Sorry, before you get set up, just let I'm always one to ask another question when the teacher's finished. Just being clear, so all our negative energy, our anger, is that regarding grief?
Yes, you're going to focus mostly. This is far more effective if you pick one person who's gone, or one animal, or one loss that you suffered. Maybe you lost a job.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the world we're living in. I mean, half the world's lost a job. So yeah, that's real grief too. So whatever it is, pick one target, because the bang for your buck will be much more substantial. And then folks can come back and replay and do the other things as well.
Yeah, sure. So yeah, so you do it on this one for maybe a relationship, and then when we listen to it again, we could maybe do it for a job loss or some other reason.
Exactly. Okay.
Okay, we'll set.
So give me about 10 seconds. I'll say start now. And then when I say start now, you'll just blast at me. When I say, okay, we're done, please stop. All right. Give me a second. And begin. Okay, wherever you are, just stop, let that go as best you can. Take a moment after doing this to squeeze yourself out of it. Wring your shoulders out, move your neck, squeeze your back, wiggle your bum. All right.
Wipe the tears.
Wipe away the tears.
Yeah.
Yeah. So tell us for you, what's what?
How that felt?
Yes.
Ooh, gosh.
Gee, I love having you on the program. I feel awkward and uncomfortable. Lovely to have you back.
Yeah. No, it's fine. It all fascinates me, Rudy. It really does. How do I feel? I felt, I was focusing. I don't mind saying what I was focusing on. I was focusing on the death of my brother, who died earlier this year. And I was focusing on the anger I felt around that, the unfairness about it, the fact that I couldn't go and see him in the hospice until the end, all of the things that many, many people have experienced and worse. But all of that, so I was just concentrating all of that. And I realized how much... It's a good job you stopped me, because there's so much in there. I could have just gone on for quite some time. And at first it was quite hard to begin feeling it again. And then I kind of got into it. And then I got really emotional about it and really didn't realize how upset I still am about it all. Because we fight it, don't we? We like you say, we cling on to something just to get through every day, don't we?
We fight it tooth and freaking nail.
Yeah.
So you said, thank you. You said a bunch of really important things. Aside from having a great experience, it does sometimes take a few seconds to get out of our head and drop down where we can go, okay, Hunter said we can do it. Let's let him have it. So that in and of itself is freeing. The realization that we didn't really know we had as much fury in there as we did. Think about all that fury pushing everything else out of its way from the death to now, whether the death was this year or 25 years ago. That's a strong emotional interference pattern. The other thing about this, the other reason I wanted to put this on replay, I contacted you and said, I got some stuff I want to do for people, because it's not only new for me and raw, but it's really important. We have to get this out of us. Yeah. We have to find a way. You know, back in the 80s, I used to go in a hotel room with 300 people and punch pillows and kill our parents, 67,000 times, and maybe got 2% of it out. So the reason this is on replay specifically is so that you can go do the rest.
Right. Gotcha.
And for you hardcorers out there, and I've met some of you, I know you're hardcore, you can do it. You can take a week and go at this. You can go at it once a day for a week. Now, everyone thinks they have, because it feels so vast and overpowering, especially our anger about it. Mm. We think we have oceans of rage, mountains of rage. We think we have endless universes. And that's how it feels for sure. If you come and do a push with me, and I'm thrilled it's here, you will be very surprised how quickly you run out of steam. Maybe not the first two times, but by the third time, it's like, I don't want to do this anymore. And the reason we don't want to do it anymore is because we're empty. We actually pushed it. And the other thing I want to tell everybody is this is 100% human normalness. If you love them, if you hated them, if you were fighting with them, if they were a jackass, whatever percentage of good, bad, ugly, stupid, idiotic the relationship was, it's 100% normal to have this unfinished anger looking for out. That's really what it's doing. It's looking for a way out. And doing a push in this way is a safe way to get it out of the system. So, Anne, do this for me. Think about your brother now that I've talked for a few minutes.
Yep.
What do you notice about your relationship with him now?
What sort of thing do you mean in terms of?
I'm not even going to lead you. You just tell me. No, you just tell me. Because whatever you feel is great. I mean, whatever you feel is perfectly right, and there's no right or wrong in this.
Yeah.
Well, you didn't just squeeze out a volcano full of anger.
I did.
So
I feel a great balance in some ways, but I also still feel this great loss, you know, this great loss of future times we may have spent together, future times we may have fallen out together. I mean, you know, just a future normal brother-sister relationship, really.
Right. Does that sadness, and I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but does that sadness, when you focus on it now, does that somehow feel more honest?
I can only describe it, Rudy, as being more in balance, more harmonious somehow.
Yes.
In the way that I feel about it.
Great. The reason I ask that, and you as always, you're so in touch with yourself. It's fabulous. When we're caught up in the fury of it, all we feel is fury. So everything is exaggerated. You know, they weren't just an idiot. They were a complete dick. Like everything is to the max, exaggerated and dramatic, because it's our fury trying to be let out of the pen. One of the things that is very interesting when we do a push like this with something that's so loaded with great intense emotions is all kinds of interesting things start to change in our life. Frequently, sleep gets way better. Happiness tends to go way up, and we can still miss them. We can still be crying and still miss them. But it's interesting to see in the coming couple of days and weeks, this is my recommendation to everybody. Just track yourself gently and see what shows up as new or curiously different, because we've made a lot of space that was being taken up by our own fury going nowhere.
Those words that you just said, we can still miss them.
Yes.
Somehow gives me permission to still miss him. I don't know what I'm expecting here, really, but
yes.
I like that we can still miss them. And I like the fact that I can miss him without feeling so terrible about it.
Yes.
Frankly, you know.
That's actually the beginning of coming out of the anger and the denial of our grief. I miss my husband like mad. Yes. And some days I cry. And some days I've actually caught myself something doing I haven't done for years, which is singing in the car. And I noticed, like, what? Aren't I supposed to be grieving? It's like, well, yeah, I cried my eyes out this morning. So,
yeah.
So I can still be, if I have to be here and he has to be there, we can still be connected and we can still miss each other. And there is a sweetness in that. The piece that was missing for me and a lot of grievers is the physicality. That's hard. Because when George passed, he had a pre-existing wish that I knew about since the beginning of our relationship, which is that when he passed, he wanted to lie in state for 3 days. And I opted to have that at home. I almost changed my mind and I thought, no, that would feel weird. So I had him at home. And during that period of time, I talked a lot. We talked to each other in the way that we did. And I put a lot of oils on him. I did a lot of chanting, a lot of ritual. And it became glaringly apparent to me that this intellectual idea that I've known and believed for eons, which is that we are only in the body, we're not the body. And remember, the context of this is I used to be a body worker. So I'm all about bodies, right? I love bodies. When he left, I saw him leave. And this hysterically funny idea occurred to me, like, how could he ever have been the body? Because the body's now just here and it's not much to speak of. And you don't have to believe my version of it. In fact, I recommend nobody believe anything I say, but go with your own experience, your own way of experiencing the grief.
Yeah.
Lean into the tools that are here because they're very well serving. They will serve you for forever.
But it is lovely to be able to grieve them, to miss them and cope with the anger in some way, or shift the anger out. Yes. Because the anger turns in on itself, I find. The anger for me makes me just get into a bad mood, feel rather cross and justified in my own self-pitying anger days sometimes, or my tired days, I'm justified. And sometimes it leads to those bottles of wine that are drunk and you just think, oh, well, who cares anyway, whatever. And that's not healthy. That's all to do with holding on to the anger.
That's one of the reasons I mentioned at the beginning, which may have seemed a little out of context, that those folks who have lost folks not only are vulnerable, but their nervous system is looking for wine and cigarettes and humping and online shopping and hardcore drugs. And they're looking for any mess they can get into that gets them in the territory of some kind of real remembrance. It is okay to miss them.
Yeah. I'm finding that beautiful balance and equilibrium. Gosh, that's amazing. So if people want to come and work with you, Rudy, I know you're offering incredible courses. You've always offering incredible healing courses and courses of all kinds. Tell us what you've got on your website, what you're offering, and what you're currently working on regarding grief and all these things.
Sure. Over the years, I have produced a lot of material on grief, but I've just completed a course called Yearning, What Grievers Actually Want, which is much of some of the highlights of what we've done here, but more in depth. And I was trying to figure out the best, easiest way for people to find me because I have too many websites and I'm all over the place. So here's my suggestion. You can either just punch into a search engine, Healers Training Rudy Hunter. That's a good one. That'll take you right to the courses. Or if that's too much, just punch in Rudy Hunter. I have been stacking most of the internet with small bite-sized videos and audios, lots of free tools for people and animals that folks can lean into. Because I would rather you, just like here, I mean, I'm here mostly to hang out with Anne, honestly. And as a secondary thing, I'd like folks to check out my work because I'm not everybody's cup of tea. I want folks who are suffering to find the best cup of tea for them. Just like you shouldn't grieve anybody else's way, I may not be the dude, but you get a chance to sample that from my suggestion is go sign up at the websites for my free private newsletter, because that keeps you in the information loop for all the goodies I'm working on. I put a lot of material out for folks to use because I want people getting better, and I can't work with everybody, or I would be really, really tired.
What you're saying there, Rudy, though, is you put a lot of free stuff out, the free things that people can access.
I actually have, I have peers who yell at me for putting out so much free stuff. So, I think it's important.
Yeah, no, it's fabulous. And tell us the sort of animal things, because people might be very interested in the work you're doing with animals, or you've got out there for animals.
I have a lot of work for animals. Let me give you the sites, because that sort of explains most of it. RudyHunter.com is one. The other is HuntersHealingCalls.com. That has a massive amount of tools on it and a lot of stuff for animals as well. And then the Ashworkers Training, which is for both people and animals. Basically, it's across the species line. That's the ashworkerstraininghub.com. And you'll see on all these sites, there's usually pictures of me squeezed into tiny dog runs. I'm not a tiny dude, so I squish my gigantic frame into cramped little quarters to go work on, when I go on holidays, I go offer my services to a bunch of refuges. And I used to work in a prison program that worked with men in rehabbing dogs within the prison system. That's some of the most glorious times I've ever spent, because I got to work with the dogs, but I also snuck in some work with the men while I was in the big house, as they say.
Fantastic, yeah. Brilliant. So RudyHunter.com, HuntersHealingCalls.com, and AshworkersTrainingHub.com is where you guys can go and pick up all the information about Rudy. Have you got a course on sale at the moment, Rudy? You were talking about Yearning. Is that what it's called?
Yes, Yearning is the name of it. The easiest way to find that, I think most directly, is by just putting in a search engine, Healers Training Rudy Hunter. That should...
I'll get the link for that, and I'll put it in the show notes for this.
Thank you so much.
Pick that up and just go straight directly to you. What can they expect on that course, Rudy, if they buy that from you?
Yearning has a lot of tools and a lot of bonuses in it. The depth of how people need to move through grief, that's a lifetime access course. So, I mean, it's a gruesome thing to even think about. We will lose a lot of people and a lot of animals. And those of us that are still around through how nutty the world is. I mean, it's a terrible way for it to be demonstrated to us, but it's this reminder that we're either leaving or they are. But the inevitability of it, I want myself and my friends and my clients and my loved ones and all of you to be more rugged with moving through it with some kind of grace, so it doesn't disable us. I'm very conscious, especially with grief and anger, that there are a lot of people who choose to opt out, and they opt out in sometimes dramatic and terrible ways. And there are other people who also opt out by getting stuck royally, which is stuck as widow, widower, the one left behind. And then they inhabit that role, and it's a terrible place to get lost. So if we can help folks stay away from that territory, I think that's a good thing.
Yeah. That's a fantastic thing. Rudy Hunter, thank you so much for coming onto the show and just explaining all of these wonderful techniques. I'm sure it's going to help an awful lot of people.
Thanks so much, Anna. Delight.
Rudy Hunter there, everyone. Please do go straight to his website, rudyhunter.com, and click on his courses. You can take a look at his new course, Yearning, What Grievers Really Want. And I'm sure that you will find it will help you enormously. And you'll be able to see some of the other amazing courses that Rudy is currently offering. He's got so many free tools and resources across all of his websites. So go check out some of those. HuntersHealingCalls.com. has got plenty of resources there, so have a good old browse, and definitely sign up to Rudy's newsletter so that you can keep up to date with everything that he is offering the world. Rudy Hunter, an amazing, beautiful, very gifted man.
all the resources for this episode, including a full transcript, are over on my website under podcasts. So do head over there and you can pick everything up on the show notes and teato.com. It's time to say au revoir. Thank you so much to all of you out there who are listening and supporting this podcast. I'm so grateful to you. Do you know, we have listeners in 93 countries around the world, in 3,454 cities and towns. So hello to every single one of you. I'm so grateful to my patrons as well. We had a wonderful patrons meeting this month. And if you are interested in joining us, please do go and check out the benefits, of which there are many, of course, on patreon.com/psychicmatters. Meanwhile, I wish you well over the next couple of weeks. Both Rudy Hunter and myself really hope that you've taken something away with you from this episode that will really help and assist you to move through your own personal grief. Come over to the Psychic Matters Facebook group page, drop us a message there and let us know. Until next time, my name is Anne Teato, and thank you for listening to Psychic Matters.